Well, speaking of him taking his shirt off, he talks about how he's sweating and takes his shirt off and throws it at Joey. Again, disgusting.
I mean, I'd give it a whiff.
I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want to feel it. Get it away from me.
I'd give it a whiff. I'd assess. I'd give it the sniff test.
Oh, Dawson, look, there's your mom. Back to you, Bob.
Hello, and welcome to Back to You, Bob, a Dawson's Creek podcast. We are your hosts, Christina and Micah, and this is episode 305, Indian Summer, which originally aired on November 3rd, 1999.
November 3rd? It's almost Thanksgiving.
We love the fall.
You know what I love to do in the fall? Drink. What's our Dawson's drink? We love a segue.
Today, we're drinking the Big Sister, which is 2.5 ounces of cranberry juice, 1 ounce of orange juice, 1 ounce of ginger beer, 1.5 ounces of citrus vodka, 1/4 ounce of simple syrup, and a little splash of lemon juice.
Oh, the splash of lemon. So refreshing.
And it's much more of a summer drink, which is great because in real life, we're in summer, baby.
And also, this episode is called Indian Summer.
Great point.
Which, I mean, we've talked about is probably an offensive and outdated term. However, it refers to... Actually, let's just look up what the real definition is. Indian summer is a period of unseasonably warm, dry weather that sometimes occurs in autumn in temperate regions of the Northern Hemisphere. So there you go.
There you go.
So I'm going to jump right into the recap.
Do it.
So episode 304, Indian Summer, opens with Pacey and Dawson in Dawson's bedroom, and they're in the middle of a huge heat wave. They're both sweaty and disgusting, and they're watching a film noir because Dawson's doing a paper on that genre for school. And he just can't wrap his head around it. You know, he discusses how there's always a femme fatale who's making the protagonist's life very complicated and wrapping him around her finger. Pacey says, this is the worst movie night ever. They used to be two happening guys with girlfriends. And Dawson says, that was a very long time ago. Once alone, Dawson sees that someone has broken into Jen's house. So he calls the police and he runs next door in the meantime and discovers that the burglar is Eve. So Eve is being her usual flirty self. She's trying to get Dawson to forget about it. She's trying to weasel out of it. And he tells her that the police are on their way. And she brings up the PSATs, kind of threatens him into staying quiet. So Pacey's brother, Deputy Doug, shows up and Dawson does just that. You know, he makes up a story and says that it was just Jen sneaking in. Dawson goes back to find that Eve is gone. So Dawson starts investigating Eve, and he discovers that she's been lying this entire time. She isn't enrolled at Capeside High. She doesn't even work at the strip club. He's starting to realize there's a lot more to Eve than meets the eye, and maybe he has just been a pawn in her game this whole time. So Dawson picks Deputy Doug's brain under the guise of a screenplay about how to find someone who doesn't want to be found, and it works. Pacey and Dawson track down Eve, and they follow her to a houseboat. And once she leaves, they secretly search through her stuff, and Dawson finds a picture of a young blonde woman. So Joey, who you may recall is being sexually harassed on the regular by her boss's son, Rob, who's the manager. Rob says that if Joey doesn't take him up on his offer to go out on a date, then he might just find another young cutie to date instead. Joey has zero interest in him, but he's not taking no for an answer. Rob shows up on a date at the gas station boat dock and asks Joey to fill him up. She asks who his next victim is, you know, who he's on a date with. And up from below deck pops Andy. And it turns out that Rob and Andy's brother, Tim, went to private school together, so they're family friends. Rob didn't know for sure that Andy and Joey knew each other, but he had a feeling. They're going to the movies because it's the only place that's cool. And Rob and Andy make several sexual innuendos to each other. Joey is grossed out. Rob gives Joey an extra tip and says, buy something pretty, and she gives it back to him and says, save it for bail money. So Joey goes to the movies as a third wheel and tries to warn Andy, who says, Joey is hardly an expert on boys between Dawson and her gay brother. She says she's fine and she's moving on with her life and she thought Joey would be happy for her. So Joey decides to crash the date even further and sits with them in the theater so they aren't alone. Andy asks her to leave, but Joey says, absolutely not. She's not leaving her alone with Rob Logan. The next day, Rob fires Joey, using the excuse that she left work early the night before to ruin his date. Joey says Rob can rot in hell, And the day his out-of-whack libido lands him in so much trouble not even his dad can save him, do not call her as a character witness. So Jack and Jen are, you know, they're in their full best friend mode. Jen says that Jack is her best friend, and that's nothing to sneeze at. You know, she's always been so jealous of Dawson and Joey and what they had, and now she has it too, with Jack. Except they won't let dating come between them like Joey and Dawson did. So Jack asks Jen if she ever wants to spend her hot nights, literally hot, with someone other than him, like a straight man, like Henry. He's so nice and great, and he even paid $500 to kiss her. Jen says it's the nice guys you have to watch out for, and she's already sleeping with the hottest guy in the football team, Jack. So Jack and Henry end up bumping into Jen at school, and Henry completely short circuits. He just can't talk to Jen. So Jack decides to do Henry a solid and set him and Jen up, secretly without her knowing. He's going to give fate a little push. So that night, Jen shows up to her special spot with Jack in the park, but is shocked to find Henry there. When they get to chatting, Henry says that Jack isn't coming. He sent Henry instead. So Jen feels very betrayed and very bamboozled. She and Henry get into a fight, and she says that dating is a pre-arrangement between two people, the two people on the actual date. Next time, try asking her. Next, Jen runs home and lashes out at Jack, saying she feels pimped out. She told him 100 times she isn't interested in Henry. Later, Jack says he didn't do any of this for Henry. He did it for her, for Jen. He just wants to see her happy. Jen says she's had a lot of boyfriends and lovers, but she's only ever had one Jack. She thinks that his setting her up was more about him than her. Maybe it's him that's actually lonely. And Jack confesses maybe it is, you know, but the gay population in Capeside is only one person. And Jen says that Jack is going to have a great love life someday. So Eve actually tracks down Dawson this time when she realizes that her picture is missing and she just knows that he took it. She wants it back. And Dawson says that he wants answers. He wants to know why she broke into Jen's house. Eve says she wanted to steal something to pawn off her money. And she owns up to everything. She says she's not a student. She is squatting in Capeside. She did steal all those motorboats. Dawson says it doesn't make sense that a girl like Eve would be nostalgic for a family photo. And Eve says it's a picture of her mother. Last Christmas, she was rummaging through the attic and she found that picture and it led to her discovering that she's adopted. And all she has to go on to find her birth mother is that picture. Dawson gives it back to her, finally believing her. He finally believes something she said. Eve confesses that she has been stringing Dawson along, like she does to most guys, but something about him was different. He really wanted to get to know the real her. And she says she's not really like this. It's just she never puts down roots long enough to get to know people, so she plays the part of a femme fatale while she's there. She says she's had no leads here, and it's time for her to move on from Capeside. The next day, Dawson is helping Grams move an air conditioner, and he spots a photo. He asks Graham, who is in that picture? And she says that that's her daughter, Helen, Jen's mom. Dawson is left speechless because that's the same woman Eve has a picture of, revealing that Jen and Eve are sisters.
Holy cow.
Holy moly.
Who saw that coming?
I did not. I mean, we'll jump in, but I did not see that coming.
Well, kudos to Gina Fattori and Tom Capinos, who wrote this bombshell. Gina Fattori is a writer and producer. She is known for being a writer-producer on Gilmore Girls, Californication, Parenthood. She wrote 20 episodes of Dawson's Creek. Not all the same as Tom. They weren't writing partners on this series, but they do write a handful of episodes together, which I'll outline in just a minute. She also created a series called Dare Me, which was a USA thriller. It started at the end of 2019 and it was canceled in April 2020. I feel like it was probably just really bad timing and kind of a victim of COVID, but it sounds really interesting and I would like to check it out.
I remember Dare Me. I did not know she was the creator. I totally remember that show. Absolutely. I believe it had to do with cheerleaders or high school murder. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, I need to check that out because I love her writing.
Tom Capinos is new to the show this season, but he's a producer from now until the end. He also writes 20 episodes for the series. So at first I was like, oh, were they writing partners? Because they each write 20 episodes, but they are not. He went on to create Californication for Showtime, and he also created Lucifer for Fox. And he co-created the show White Famous for Showtime, which was a 2017 show that only lasted one season.
I remember that as well. Jay Farrow.
Yeah, Jay Farrow was based on Jamie Foxx's life, I guess. And Jamie Foxx was a producer and made cameos across the season. So together they write this episode, they write the season 3 finale, they write the season 4 finale, the season 5 finale, and the season 6 penultimate episode before the two-part finale that Kevin Williamson came back to write. So obviously they're heavy hitters. They're kind of the ones that they go to for these big scripts and big storylines, which I thought was really interesting and something I hadn't clocked before.
So Tom Capinos is actually that guy who we've referenced a few times this season who regrets the Eve storyline in the Vanity Fair article.
I wonder if it's because he wrote this episode specifically, which is kind of like the stirring the pot a little bit.
Yeah. Well, who directed this film noir?
This episode was directed by Lou Antonio.
You love Lou Antonio.
He's an OG. He was previously with us for 105 The Hurricane, 206 The Dance, and 221 Ch-Ch-Ch-Changes. And this is his last episode of the series. It's sad to see him go.
OMG. It is sad.
Yeah.
Who's the guest cast shout out? Who are you going to give that to?
Guest cast shout out for this one, I'm going to give to Nicholas Lang. We've talked about him a bunch, but I haven't officially given him the guest cast shout out yet. He plays Rob Logan, Joey's crummy boss. He was a working actor. He had episodes of Dawson's, obviously, That 70s Show, Charmed, Nash Bridges, Fantasy Island, Ghost Whisperer, Close to Home. But he stopped acting in 2011, so I dug into it a little bit, and it turns out he transitioned to work behind the camera and started his own production company that mainly focuses on commercials and music videos. He works with a lot of musical artists and influencers at this point, but it just seems like he has a pretty stable little business. So love to see it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
He's a cutie. He's a little cutie.
I also wanted to shout out Dylan Neal is back playing Doug Witter. We haven't seen him in a while.
We love Deputy Doug.
We haven't seen him since season one.
He wasn't in season two at all?
We last saw him in the season one finale.
Wow. You know what? I wonder if that was the year he was in an Aaron Spelling soap opera.
Hyperion Bay?
Oh, that's maybe what it is. It was in 1998.
It is 1998 to 1999. Yep.
So he was off doing his thing.
Working with Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Yes. And who was the lead on that? It's the girl from Thornbirds.
Christina Moore and Sydney Penney.
Sydney Penney. She's a soap star. She played, so Thornbirds is this big epic between a priest and a woman, and it's like an epic because he's like the family priest, so he meets her when she's little, and she grows up, and then they have an affair. She plays young Maggie.
Wow.
Little scandal. You've never seen Thornbirds?
No, that sounds wild.
I bet your parents know Thornbirds. Because like my mom is obsessed with Thornbirds, you know, like the Catholic. It was like Roots. It was like a big epic networky like.
Like an event.
An event. And I want to say they did it a few times. Like 5 years later, they did a sequel. You know. Anyway, what about music moments?
So I watched this with the new music and nothing stood out. But when I looked back, I saw that Madonna Swim was in this episode, which I'm sure is yours as well. I know you love a Madonna moment.
Love Madonna moment. Just saw her. But I also love the other music moment. There's only two in this episode. The Chantal Crevier-Zouk. We love Chantal Crevier-Zouk.
Well, Madonna, I think I've broken my partner's brain because Swim, the song in this episode is called Swim. And Swim is right before Ray of Light on the album. And for some reason, Ray of Light is one of those songs that always got me like, not like pumped, like crazy, but it's just a very high energy song. So that for the last 5 years or so has been my alarm to wake up in the morning. So every morning, Madonna Ray of Light plays on my phone.
That's so funny.
And he hates it.
You get so triggered by alarm sounds. It is actually crazy.
It does ruin it.
1000%.
If I hear someone's cell phone ring is like another alarm sound, I'm like, ah, like tenses up my whole body.
I didn't know. Do you love Madonna or do you just love Ray of Light?
I mean, I love Madonna. I was raised on Madonna, so I feel like I connect more to early Madonna than new Madonna.
Yeah.
But yeah, oh, sure. I think this was probably the last album that I was like really into, and then I lost touch with Madonna a little bit.
Well, it's a great music moment. I mean, it's a great song. Season 3 has some jams. Must say. Do you have a past versus present this episode?
Nothing that stood out. Maybe as we go through, something will pop up. But what about you?
The only past versus present that I could think of is, you know, we have a new showrunner this season. It's Alex Gonza. And he and the network made such a big deal about wanting to do less soapy this season and kind of do more grounded teen stories, which we've talked about, I think, almost every episode so far. But it's so interesting now because this is the soapiest thing I think the show does throughout its whole 6 years. It has a long lost sister. But I love the early season three arc. So it's just interesting to me because I always think of Eve as like the soapiest thing out there. And I think a lot of people think it's a jump the sharky kind of. I always compare it to on Friday Night Lights when Landry and Tyra killed the attacker.
My gosh. Yes.
And people hate that. I love it. I love that. But that was the season where a lot of people think Friday Night Lights jumped the shark and they do think it bounced back. But it's a super soapy thing that works for me, but is a little out there for the show. So that's the only thing, knowing that they intentionally wanted to do less soapy and they went in doing one of the soapiest twists that the show has, is just interesting. I don't know if it's a past versus present, but it's something that I'm like, huh.
Yeah.
How did the network approve this if the network was in press releases that summer saying, it's going to be a grounded teen show this year. We're going to go back to season one where things were just kids, you know.
I did clock that too, that the score in this episode is so soapy. Like it's like over the top. Like I know that it's also a film noir, like it's supposed to be a film noir episode. So I felt like they were leaning into that. But now that you say the word soapy, I'm like, oh no, that's what it was. Like very dramatic.
They were hitting that saxophone. It was very Silk Stockings, yeah. Melrose Place.
Very.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But that's the Eve, right? The Eve music sting has been in the last few episodes, and that's a very sexy saxophone, I'm saying. Sexy, sexy kind of a sting, right?
Yeah, like a slinky kind of, yeah. We're both doing the same body motion, which is great for an audio podcast.
We're both just swaying in the wind, like one of those things you see like a car wash or you know, like a used car wash. I just love Eve. I don't know. Oh, I just, oh, and this is her last episode.
This is it. Let's open it up. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. How did you feel seeing such a sweaty Joshua Jackson in the cold open?
The first thing in my notes is everyone is so sweaty. The entire episode, like they must have had someone walking around with a spray bottle. Everyone is wet the entire episode. It's crazy.
I think it's effective.
Yeah. I mean, it makes you, it's visceral. I'm like, man.
They're like, look, it's the heat wave and we're not going to let you forget it.
I related to it. We did not have air conditioning when I was growing up and my house got to be 20 million degrees. Like we had airy window units, but we would only put them in the bedrooms for sleeping. I was sweating my entire youth.
Same, same. We were like a big fan family, ceiling fan, box fan.
Yeah, we had a lot of fans too. Floor fans, oscillating fans.
Big fans. But we eventually did move into like a window unit AC like Graham's has at the end. Yeah, we eventually did venture there.
Yeah, I mean, loved it. Love a wet Joshua Jackson.
Yeah. And then he leaves and then Dawson sees a flashlight. There's something going on next door and he goes over and Eve jumps out of the window dressed like a cat burglar. She has a bandana on her head.
Also, it feels very classic Dawson to me to see something suspicious and immediately call the police. He did not hesitate at all. Like, what if their lights went out and Graham's was just using a flashlight? He did not even hesitate.
I would probably call the police, but I'm a bit of a, you know, I do see myself in Dawson a little bit. So, you know, as discussed, look, I'm like, call the police. That's what they're there for. I'm reading this book right now and like the kid just won't call the police. And like, the police need to be called, just call them.
Yeah, I'm not good at that.
There's a non-emergency line. You don't have to go for 911.
That's a good point.
So he calls and Doug is the one that comes.
But like you said, so Eve jumps out of the window and then they end up in his room with his little first aid kit. He's wrapping up her bumps and bruises. And my favorite line of the whole episode, do you know what it is?
I do. She says something like, you and your little friends that could be extras at Sweet Valley High.
Yeah, the rest of the Sweet Valley High extras you call your friends, which for those of you who don't know, she was the star of Sweet Valley High with her twin sister.
I love that little nod.
Loved it. Loved it.
So she basically threatens him and says, if you tell the police you saw me over there, I will tell the police that you were involved in the PSAT missing scan, you know, the missing PSAT answer code scandal. And he was like,
and
you
what
did that.
A stupid threat. We don't even know if they even knew that any test was missing, do we?
No.
And he didn't ever use the test. If he thought it through, I feel like he would be like, who cares? What's Doug going to say about that? He could just deny it. Anyway, I digress.
I feel like it's a good threat. it's a good threat for our teens in their little teen world. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
The PSAT, we thought the PSATs were such a big deal.
Do you think she intentionally did that so she would have something to hold over his head if she needed it? Or do you think she just did it and then it worked out?
I think she just loves being an agent of chaos.
Yeah.
So she defuses Dawson momentarily. He doesn't tell Deputy Doug anything. And then we go to Jack and Jen. They are to escape the heat wave. They've gone to the park in as few clothes as possible. They're hanging out. They're talking about Henry, romance, love. Jack is giving us a free gun show.
It's iconic. It's one of the more iconic Jack and Jen images from the show. Images. I feel like you see it all the time.
They're laying on one of Grams's quilts. One of Grams's like homemade quilts, I'm guessing. Very 90s.
But they're both wet and they're touching. Like, just put an inch between you two. That can't be comfortable. It has to be so hot.
See, I think when you're like hot and skinny, you can do that. I wouldn't want to be touched when I'm hot because there's so much of me. But yeah, she's literally in his armpit and it's like hot and sticky. I think it's hot. I think there's sexual chemistry there.
They kind of strike me as the kind of people who in today's world could just have casual sex with each other and still be best friends and never like get hung up about it.
Oh, yes. Like if this was made in today's era, they would be having like, I feel like they would just be casually having three ways or whatever.
Totally.
There's sexual chemistry there though, or something. I mean, it's probably like a romantic thing. It's a love chemistry and we're picking up on like the friendship love, but it's so interesting because I don't believe Kurt Smith is actually gay, but you know, he does it so believably.
Yeah, I actually Googled that while watching this, like who his previous, or if he has a spouse or who he's been with in the past, and it is women. He was married to a woman.
But anyway, I just love them. Love them. They're so just cute. And they're saying that they've basically entered a Joey Dawson dynamic, which is a bold statement.
It is a bold statement. And it's like very bold to be like, we've known each other for 6 months and now we are the best friends for 16 years.
And they sleep in the same bed, which is interesting.
I'm already sleeping with the hottest boy on the football team. Isn't that what she says?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a, he can sleep where Gramps died. There's an extra bed.
I'm sure Grams wouldn't have a problem with that. She was packing him up the day he died. Got this room turned over.
Maybe she donated the furniture to Catholic charities.
Of course she did that, Grams. We just love her.
Next scene, 7:30 a.m. Joey's at work drinking a Diet Coke. Classic Dawson's. Love their soda.
I just love that. I love that. You know that like TikTok thing that's going around? It's like the dream is I go to a restaurant. I sit down. I get chips and salsa. I order a margarita. Do you know that audio trend?
I don't, but it sounds amazing.
You deleted TikTok, your strength, your perseverance. But anyway, my dream would be sitting on a boat, Diet Coke.
What are you eating?
What am I eating? I don't know. It's 7:30 in the morning. Eggs?
No. Eggs on a boat with Diet Coke.
That sounds great. I mean, that's more of a yacht situation. That's like my below deck.
Diet Coke, boat, eggs, scrambles.
I don't know. A grapefruit?
Oh, okay.
Salmon? Salmon Benedict?
Oh my God, actually.
But this isn't a yacht. I mean, it's a little...
My dream, yacht. Salmon Benedict, mimosa.
Oh, for sure.
Side of Dramamine, so I don't puke it up.
We get seasick. We're 40. It's so funny when Rob takes his shirt off because does he objectively have a good body? Yes. Well, we've talked about this. These skinny little men on this show who take their shirt off and think that they're like fit just because they're skinny. It's so funny to me. But you said you loved this as a kid.
Yeah, but it's very late 90s, early 2000s. Like everyone was skinny. And yes, that's what I loved. And now I'm like, why did I love that? Like, why did I want someone who was smaller than me? You know?
That's a nightmare, truly.
Like, I'm talking, there guys in my high school were 140 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah, not for me. We've talked about, because like Kerr is a man.
He is a man. He is. Kerr
is a
Mitch.
Muscular man. Yes. And Josh and Rob, and then there's Lynn later, Chad Michael Murray shows up. And like, I mean, they're skinny and they're hot, but like there's nothing. The hotness is not a result of their hard work. The hotness is a result of their parents being hot.
It's genetics.
Genetics.
Well, speaking of him taking his shirt off, he's talks about how he's sweating. and takes his shirt off and throws it at Joey. Again, disgusting. Don't you throw your sweaty, gross-ass shirt at me?
I mean, I'd give it a whiff.
I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want to feel it. Get it away from me.
I'd give it a whiff. I'd assess. I'd give it the sniff test. But then he just, like, he brings the sexual harassment to a new level. He sprays her with a hose. Sir, look, I don't know. I don't know what the end game here is. Jail.
Speaking of jail, let's talk about Jen eating a very phallic ice pop in the hallway at school.
Honestly, kind of hot. I mean, I thought it was hot.
It's like the most suggestive I feel like they've been on this show. Maybe not. Maybe I'm misremembering, but she's really going to town on that ice pop. And Henry is choked up about it.
Look, we have a straight male showrunner this season. They're giving us football players. They're giving us cheerleaders. They're giving us fellatio lollipops. This isn't Kevin Williamson world anymore. This is Alex Ganza world.
It's true. The male gaze is here.
Femme fatale. Yeah. Male gaze is here. Dawson's going to strip clubs. He's like, we're in it.
We're in it, baby.
The straight male era doesn't last long, but it's a little bit of a period and we're in it. And Jen is sucking that thing down.
And she's wearing like a tight fitting strappy dress. It felt very out of character. The all of it. She's like, Henry, do you want to lick?
All I could think about was COVID during the want to lick thing. And I hate myself for that. I hate myself for that. But all I could think about was like, ew, germs.
COVID changed us.
I know. Lord, today. But Henry completely short circuits. I feel like anyone would if your crush is sitting there like performing a sex act. But I will say, props to the continuity department.
For the ice pop?
Yeah. They kept those levels consistent.
Way to go, props. Way to go, script supervisor. We'd love to see it.
We'd love to see some consistency because there's nothing more annoying than when you cut back and the lollipop's half gone and then you cut back and it's full again. I'm saying lollipop, I mean popsicle.
It's food and cigarettes are really hard. Yeah.
The most famous one is in Pretty Woman. Julia Roberts is eating pancakes and then there's a shot where she has like five left and then there's a shot where she has like none left and then it goes back. I believe we call that a jump cut.
You better believe it.
Look at me using post-production words. Dawson running around, investigating Eve. Eve's told so many lies. She's not at Cape Side High. She doesn't work at the strip club. The guy who runs the strip club is like, sir, you're 16. Get out of my strip club. And he's like, but I need to find Eve. He's like, boy, bye.
He's like, you're full of it. And the lady at the school is very offended. She's like, no, Eve Whitman is or ever has been a student at Cape Side High. Okay.
I was living for that woman's desktop background. And I also just love that the strip club has an aquarium. We love the details.
It's a classy place.
Well, and Jack is well-intentioned, right? He's just like, I'm going to give fate a little push. He truly believes that Jen and Henry will be a cute couple and that they're good. And Jen is lonely and Henry loves her. And Henry is aggressive in his pursuit, but at this stage in 1998, it's like puppy love, unrequited puppy love kind of a situation. And Jack just wants to give it a little push.
He does. He's very well intentioned and he does want the best for both of them.
Absolutely. So Dawson runs into Deputy Doug, Pacey's brother, and he's like, how do you find someone who doesn't want to be found? And Deputy Doug is like, the laundromat. You know, if they're squatting and you don't really know who they are, they're going to go to the laundromat eventually to wash their clothes. Dawson stakes out the laundromat and he finds her.
She's also getting a popsicle.
Yes. The popsicle, the ice cream men of Cape Side are killing it this week. This is the week that's going to float them the rest of the year.
They were like, we thought summer was over. We thought the income was done. This Indian summer has really perked up our business.
And look, our two-time worst dressed Bobby winner, Dawson Leary, does it again because he's wearing hiking boots with white tube socks. And I just want to point it out because I feel like it's aggressive.
Yeah, no, he's awful. He's really not a good dresser.
Anyway.
So Rob, on his day off, comes to the gassing station or whatever we determined it was called last week and says he's going on a date. And Joey fills up his boat. And she's like, oh, like you found somebody to go out with you. And then Andy comes up from the depths of the boat and is like, oh, yeah, Can you believe I'm going out with Rob Logan? Joey is like, what? But my favorite part of the scene is she says to Rob, I think you might have overdone it a little bit with the CK1. And that really brought me back to a time and place.
So good. I remember all those clones. Tommy. What was the one called?
Tommy. CK1.
What was the one called that was in the little...
Curve.
Curve! Curve. There was a blue curve.
My high school boyfriend wore a curve, and I couldn't get enough of that.
Do you think it still would be good?
I don't know.
Should I get it? I mean, the 90s are back.
It's true. Maybe it'll be re-released.
Maybe, so Rob is like trying to make Joey jealous or something's happening. And then he puts a dollar bill in her breast pocket.
Ugh.
And she's disgusted. And she takes it out and she says, save it for bail money. Because he's well over. He's a college boy. And these are high school juniors.
But we find out, or did we already know this episode, that he's a senator's son? Is that what he is? Doesn't Andy say, Senator, you went to prep school with my brother, Tim?
Yeah, so Tim is Andy's brother that died in that car accident. And so he and Rob went to high school together. And so they're family friends. They know each other. And he's a little creep. He's taking Andy out, trying to make Joey jealous or something. I don't even know what Rob's end game is here. But
he does say he's going to get so lucky tonight.
Yeah, he and Andy are both making weird sexual innuendos. It's like it's too hot to do anything. And Andy's like, well, almost anything. Ha ha ha.
Gross. Yeah, Senator Logan's son. That's what Andy says in the movie theater scene. So he's Senator's son. He is entitled.
And the senator just runs a gas station boat dock. I still really don't know what used to call it. Boat gas station?
Yes.
So we go to Henry and Jen. It's the setup. Jen doesn't know about it. Henry does. Henry has written on his hand, coincidence, moonlight, nice looks, beautiful spot. So he doesn't like short circuit and go off book. So before she shows up, he's like practicing to himself. He's like, what a coincidence. Look at the moonlight. You look nice. What a beautiful spot. It's so funny to me. I loved this scene.
It is funny. He's like, don't puke or something. I forget what he's saying.
And then they get to talking and she's like, oh, Jack should be here any minute. And he's like, actually, Jack's not coming. He sent me. And she spirals. She feels set up. She feels bamboozled. She doesn't like that she had no say in this date. And at one point she sees the writing on his hand and asks us to see it. And he's like, no, you're awesome. You smell awesome. You look awesome. Everything about you is awesome. Do you feel, what would you feel in the circumstance? Would you feel blindsided or would you feel nice?
I probably would have gone along with it, but I did like how Jen was like, a date is usually an agreement between two people. And you forgot the part where you asked me. If a person wanted to go on a date with me, I would want them to be able to talk to me enough to have a conversation with me. He's never even had a conversation with her. He's too afraid and he thinks he's in love with her, but he's never talked to her.
Love at first sight.
What would you feel?
I don't think I would be mad at my friend. I don't think I would be mad.
I think that Jen really is. This is something that she's working through. And the big thing in this episode is her relationship with Jack and how I think it's her first ever secure, like she feels really good about this friendship. And like, it's her first friendship where she feels like they don't have any ulterior motives and not even just like sexually, like they're just friends. So maybe she's annoyed that Jack didn't tell her.
Sure. Something that Jen does to Henry that annoys me is that she talks about his age a lot and she downplays his age, but it's something that she always struggled with as well. She always wanted people to take her more seriously than her age. She always wanted Gramps and people to take her more seriously than they take other people her age. So she keeps saying, you know, you're 15, you're 15. What do you know about love? And it kind of feels like it goes against what she would tell people when she was younger and when she was that age. So yeah, I mean, she's emotional and she's upset, but I think she overreacted a bit, I have to say. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a really good point.
Dawson and PC have tracked Eve down to this houseboat. When they see Eve changing, she goes out, they go in, they go through her stuff. Dawson finds the picture and then Deputy Doug shows up because there's been a call that someone's been trespassing on the boat. And that's when Dawson gets confirmation, like, this woman is squatting. She doesn't live here. She's like a con woman. And then Pacey shows up and just makes fun of his brother being gay for like 90 straight seconds.
The other thing in that scene that I had never clocked before is Doug says, we've been trying to track down this woman, this like femme fatale that you've been talking about. She stole a speedboat a few weeks ago, and it's when she came to take Dawson out on a date or whatever. I never really thought about that before.
Yeah, at the end of like A Virgin, when she comes to pick him up and his dad is screaming, "Where's Dawson? Dawson, where are you?" She stole that boat.
She's breaking into boats left and right.
She's the femme fatale from the cold open in Dawson's movie that is wrapping Dawson around her finger and playing him for a fool.
Mm-hmm.
Dawson is living a film noir. So we have to talk about how Joey goes to this movie theater and crashes the date, literally walks through the movie aisle to sit with Rob and Andy the same way she did
with Jen and Dawson.
Yes. And the same way Jen did to them in season two. And the same way Pacey did to Tamara and Mr. Gold.
It's right? True. Yeah.
So we love this trope. We love a crashing a movie date in Cape Side trope.
Then they have a conversation in the lobby, which is also something that happens in all of these scenarios. And Andy says to Joey, "Guys, it's not your area of expertise. Like, between Dawson and my gay brother, you know nothing. I want to be looked at as a sexual creature. Just because you don't doesn't mean that Rob's a bad guy." So my question for you is, if you were Joey and you tried multiple times to warn your friend and your friend then said that stuff to you, which it's like mildly insulting, but whatever, would you still continue on, or would you just be like, "I said my piece, I'm out of here"?
If she insulted me the way that Andy insulted Joey, I would leave.
Me too. I'd be like, okay.
Yeah. But Joey's a better person than I. Yeah, I wouldn't. Because they were kind of low blows, I thought.
They were. But do you think Joey is strictly operating from a place of being a good friend? Like, she's like, "Andy's going to get burned and I need to stay this course"?
Yes, absolutely. Do you?
I don't know. I can't think of another motivation, but I was just like, man, she's really going for it. Like, she's just going to keep going.
I think Joey knows what a predator this guy is. Yeah.
She comes with a ridiculous like bucket of nachos and raisinettes, and like she's really trying hard to crash this date. And Andy is pissed. Like, Andy is not into it at all. She's not even like, "Oh, maybe I should pay attention to Joey." She's like, "Get out of here."
Andy's made it clear she wants to, you know, she wants to have sex with this man.
Yeah.
I get the allure of like, "Oh, my older brother's friend." Like, that's always been
totally.
Like,
totally.
Yeah.
100%.
I mean, it's never happened to me.
You never know.
I think Joey has good intentions, and I think Andy honestly just like wants to have sex with her brother's friend. Good for both of them. I support women.
If she knows what she wants and she's been warned, it's her own fault if she gets hurt.
Exactly. So Jen is storming in, ready to kill Jack, and she basically says, "You pimped me out to one of your football buddies. Like, I'm some pornographic fantasy. How could you do this to me? I thought we were better than this. I thought you were better than other guys. I thought you were different from other guys."
Overreaction.
She's spiraling. She's catastrophizing.
She's like, what are you getting out of this? Am I going to have to sleep with the whole team?
And he's like, "No, just Henry."
But it was really cute because right before she walks in, Jack is like, "Oh man, ever since I started playing football, I'm eating you out of house and home," like commenting on how much more he's been eating. And Grams goes, "No, no, you make my granddaughter so happy." And then she comes in pissed.
Yeah, that was funny. And then we get to the scene where Eve wants her picture back. Dawson says, "Not until you tell me everything." And Eve confesses. She's like, "Yes, everything you know about me is a lie." But she also comes at him with like, "Why are you so mad at me? I've turned you from a dork to a stud. I've made your life so interesting. You know, what is your deal?" And he's just kind of like, "I'm sick of being a pawn in your game. Give me some answers." And she basically says, "When I went last Christmas up into the attic to look for some wrapping paper, I came across this picture and I asked my parents about it. And it turns out that I'm adopted. And this is the only thing they know about my mom. This is her. And all they know about her is that she's from this part of the country. So I'm going from every seaside town to seaside town, showing people the picture, trying to find her. I haven't had any leads. So now I'm going to leave town." Now, my question is that a lie? Does she know that her mom is Helen? And because she was in the house, right? She was in Jen's house looking at pictures. So Eve knows, right?
She has to know or have figured it out in her time here and just not wanting to give Dawson that information, I would think.
Yeah. I would think she saw a picture of her mom in that house.
Or I would think that she asked around because in theory, Jen's mom grew up in that house. So I feel like she figured it out. She went to the house to see if she could find anything else. Didn't. And then was like, all right, I'm out of here. I would guess.
I think so too. And Eve just kind of says, you know, I play this part when I blow through these towns and most guys just eat it up. It's not the real me. I play like a vixen. I play a femme fatale. But you're different. You wanted to get to know the real me. And she says, you know, I'm on my way out, but maybe I'll be a footnote in your biography. And he says, I think you'll get a whole chapter.
I really liked early. This is jumping back to earlier, but Pacey is talking to Dawson when they're trying to find her. And he's like, you know, you got to realize, Dawson, there are going to be a lot of ladies in life that are just day players. And like, they may steal a few scenes, but they're not going to be there for the long term. And like, whatever, whatever. And this kind of harkened back to that a little bit.
Yeah. And then Eve just crawls out that window and it's over.
Yeah.
Jen and Jack make up and they determine that it's more about Jack's loneliness. You know, he's setting Jen up because he wants someone. And she says, you know, I have you and that's more important than anyone else. And I'm okay being alone. And Jack wants a romance, but he's not going to find it in Capeside. And their friendship is intact. They've now had their first fight and he still has muscles and he's still wearing a sleeveless shirt.
He still looks like he was spritzed with a spray bottle. He says, this isn't New York where gay kids are just tripping over each other coming out of the closet. This is Capeside.
I love the way they portray New York.
I know.
But she says, you're going to have a love life. You're going to have a fantastic love life.
Who knows?
We'll have to see. Then Joey gets fired because she left work. Now that is a valid reason for firing someone. She did leave. You cannot leave work early just because you want to. She left work before they closed.
Yeah, he is a dick, though.
For sure.
It's like when you want to fire someone, but you just have to wait for them to trip up. Like, she did a thing that is worth firing, but he's not firing her because she did that thing.
Yeah, and he's firing her because she won't hook up with him. Yeah.
And then she was trying to deter Andy from hugging up with him too.
Sure. Yeah. And then Dawson sees Helen.
I just wrote down the Lord Jesus Christ because Dawson sees a picture of Helen and says, who is that? And she says, oh, that's the Lord Jesus Christ as portrayed by one of our CCD kids or something like that.
Yeah.
So funny.
There's a drawing on the wall beyond the picture of Helen.
It's just really, that's the Lord Jesus Christ. Really made me laugh. But yeah, there's a picture of Grams and Helen. Same woman that was in Eve's picture. Eve's mom is Jen's mom.
They're freaking sisters. So that's why Eve has been here this whole time. That's why she's been telling all of these lies. Maybe that's why she infiltrated this friend group. We don't know. We don't know what Eve knows.
And that's why we're drinking the big sister this week.
We're drinking the big sister. And the big sister has been drunk, honey.
1999/2000, Micah. Did you see that coming?
No, never.
Never.
I've talked about this a lot on this show where they would tease something, but I just didn't think it was going to be anything. I really didn't think someone was going to have sex in Sex, She Wrote. They do these big things where I was just thought it would be like schmuck bait kind of a thing. I really thought Eve was just going to be like a mysterious girl who's just like, she's making herself seem more mysterious than she is. Like, I really didn't think she had a secret. I really didn't think she was there for anything. I didn't think there would be a big reveal. I thought she was just like, you know, I didn't think there was a big secret behind her being there. I thought it was all kind of a red herring.
It was shocking.
But I'm glad I was wrong.
We love a twist.
I love Brittany Daniel.
Love her.
I love Eve Whitman.
Well, what you watching?
What am I watching? The Mole on Netflix. Must see TV. It's season 2 of the Netflix reboot. There was an original show on ABC probably about 20, 25 years ago. They did a few seasons, then they did a celebrity season. A few celebrity seasons that had like Kathy Griffin, Corbin Burnson, Stephen Baldwin, Kim Coles. But anyway, the reboot season, it's so good. It's like a mystery. It's like a reality show mystery. It's a competition reality show. There's probably 10 people. One of them is a secret saboteur, who's sabotaging all the missions. And at the end, you find out who it is because they narrow it down to 3 people. And there's one winner, there's one mole, and there's one loser. So it's similar to The Traitors, except on The Traitors, there's 3 of them. And you know up front who it is, and you're following them, trying to sabotage the whole time. And on The Mole, it's more of like a whodunit mystery.
I loved the original Mole.
This one, it's not as good as the original, but it is still very good. The original Mole used to reveal the Mole in a very interesting way because they would basically have three people. They'd have the final three in like booths, locked booths, and the host would open the door of the winner first. And the three know who's in what booth. They're the only ones that do. The three people in the booths know who's in what booth. So then the host would give the winner the key to the Mole's booth. The winner would then go and unlock the Mole's booth. And when the Mole steps out of the booth, that's when you found out who the Mole was. And it was crazy. This one, they just have the three of them standing right next to each other and they reveal the Mole first. They're like, the Mole, step forward. And that person steps forward. And then the host announces the winner. So it was a more suspenseful reveal on the old version. That's my biggest note, but it's still, like, I still get the chills when they reveal who the Mole is. It's so good. What are you watching?
Not too much. I watched the first episode of Man with a Thousand Kids on Netflix, which is a docuseries about this guy.
Yeah, what is that?
I don't know. I watched it with my mom and we got sucked in, but I haven't moved on. There are three episodes total. And it's about this guy who's like a sperm donor. It comes off as very like altruistic. He's helping these couples have babies or single women have babies in the Netherlands. And then they come to realize that there are like hundreds of his kids in this small area. But he's also a travel vlogger. So the end of the first episode, spoiler, is them being like, wait, has he done this in all the places he's traveled to? And it cuts to Australia and another couple there. So it seems like he has kids all over the world and he just wants to have the most kids of any human ever.
This is all over my Twitter timeline, this show. I've never heard of it except for on Twitter. Yeah. Everyone's talking about it. By everyone, I mean like the 30 people I follow.
I don't know who's even on Twitter anymore.
We're never going to call it X. But yeah, I've it's so hard to keep up with all those Netflix docuseries, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes I'll just click one because I'm like, I just need something on in the background. And if it sucks me in, it sucks me in. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And this one kind of did suck me in. So I'll have to finish it and let you know.
I did want to discuss a scripted show. And when I tell you I'm obsessed with it, when I tell you that I wait every Tuesday or Wednesday for it to come out on Apple TV, The Land of Women, starring Eva Longoria.
What is it?
If you like Desperate Housewives and you liked her character on Desperate Housewives specifically, she's basically playing Gabby Solis again. Just this very, you know, like hoity-toity, girly socialite. And she has to go on the run due to something her husband did. And she decides to go to her mom. She takes her mom and her daughter on the run to the mom's, like, a very small town in Spain that's like a wine town, like a vineyard. You know, so she's on the run. Like, her mom has secrets, but it's light and it's fun. And it's the only thing is it's in two languages. So you can't zone out. You have to pay attention to read the subtitles because a lot of it is in Spanish. And it's just one of those like unserious shows that I feel like they don't make anymore. You know, it's just light and fun and easy. And then the hour's over before you know it. And you're just like, oh.
All right, that's it.
Well, what are we going to drink next week? Heavens.
Next week, we're drinking the Drag Queen. You will need orange juice, 7-Up or Sprite, vodka, and cherry juice. And hot tip, tart cherry juice is really good for sleep. So if you buy a bottle of it for this cocktail, drink it before you go to bed on any given night, and it helps with sleep.
Really? It's not high in sugar? It doesn't keep you up?
Nope, you have to make sure you get tart cherry juice. But yeah, it triggers something. Melatonin production, I'm not sure. Hot tip.
Loves it.
We will see you guys next week for episode 306, Secrets and Lies.
We'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.